tonight on Arena, Maria Niwini joins us from Donegal, and new albums from The Pretenders, Jarvis and Ellie Goulding up for review. #51551 is the text. You can tweet the programme at RTE Arena. And as I said in my menu, joining me first this evening from West Donegal is Maria Niwini. Maria and her family, Namoonies, will be taking part in the reimagined Errigal Arts Festival this weekend in what have delightfully been called Shruhain, a lovely Irish word meaning little streams. It's a great description of what's happening in the festival, Maria.
Yes, it is, because it is little streams of the all the acts that are that were supposed to be there live, of course, but because of the pandemic, things had to change, and they were very creative, I have to say. Paul Brown and the director of the festival and Sean Feeney were very creative at trying to get the virtual festival up and making it very interesting, I have to say.
Well, they're certainly creative in doing that, and very creative in that title. It tickled me pink when I when I read it. Shruhain, yeah. It's great. At any rate, the original intention was anything but a stream from you and Namoonies. It was going to be a full on week with the Moonies, a touch of the Donegal Kardashians, was it?
Yes, I'd say it was something like that. Yeah, maybe not as elaborate or as fancy as them. But no, it would be more earthy than that, I'd say. Now, we were going to have a week of music and song. And of course, we're in the middle of the Gaeltacht here in the Northwest. And we were going to then, like, there were people from all over the world going to come and, you know, show off the area, bring them to the islands, bring them to Hudibugs, bring them to Leo's Tavern, bring them to Glenveagh National Park, Sliabhigh. You know, there's so many beautiful places to go here. And we were actually really disappointed we weren't able to do this, but it had to be changed a bit, yes.
And so yourself, your brother Gerard, and your sister Anna, are, I suppose you're the kind of the senior part of the family, but there are lots of the next generation involved in this set of Shruhain or streams as well, aren't there?
Yes. Oh, there is. Well, there's my daughter, and she's Nia. She's the youngest performing member. And then Kieran Omwini Garrett's son, who's a fantastic musician, and his wife, Kathleen McGowan from Ashburn, fantastic musician as well. So between them and then our neighbour, Moena Sloney of the famous Sloney clan, we all play together, and we got together and we actually decided to create new music for this week. And it took a long time, but there's nothing as creative as giving us a date to have it ready by.
It's like a cattle prod, I would say, when you see the date, isn't it?
It gets you very creative.
Yeah, let's be creative very quickly, please. And all of this was happening, I think, were you all more or less in separate households, or did you come together for some of the composition? I know everything that was done in a safe and socially distanced way, but did you manage to get together in the compositional period, or how did that work?
Well, we did kind of send MP3s and little videos to each other, and, you know, agreements or what. But we have been all very careful, isolating our mother. The head of the family is 93 years old, and we wanted to make sure she was safe. Yeah. But we have all been very, very careful, and we went to, and we actually sat in her kitchen one night, apart, and went over the tunes once and the song, and agreed and disagreed, and delighted with the outcome, to be honest.
Well, that's great that you actually managed to get together in your mother's home, 93, and brilliant that.
Yes.
And she's been well throughout the period, hopefully, has she?
She has, as she says herself in Irish, Niall Pian na Paula Jarim. And like at 93, that's a great boast.
Well, I know what pian is. What's a palaida? Having a pain or a knee?
Palaida, I'm not really sure, but it must be something like a pain as
well. Yeah, it's just another word for pain.
It's another word for it, but it's a fantastic saying. She says it every day.
Níl pian na palaida, or urim. I like
urim.
It. Yeah, well, there you go.
I like it.
Between Shruhain and palaida, I'm learning that my Gaelic is improving enormously tonight.
Oh, you'll have to just come to Donegal. We give you loads of bad words as well.
They're the ones that we might want to get into. Let's talk about it. I have a few excerpts because we're not going to play the entire pieces that you've composed.
Oh no, it's premiered.
Because that'd be stealing the thunder.
We'll give you a taste.
Yeah, we have a little taste here. Yes. Let's start with Shul Isuan. Now I'm guessing that this. Shul, yes. Walking, we all know that one. And Isuan, asleep, I'm presuming. Is this about sleepwalking, a literal type of sleepwalking or a figurative type of sleepwalking, would you say, Maria?
Well, Garage, my brother, wrote this, and he has my father's great talent of writing poetry at ease. And I'd say it's a sort of a poetic sleepwalking. Knowing him, he enjoys his sleep, so I don't think he'd be walking too often in the middle of the night. But it's a beautiful, beautiful thinking of the loved ones that have gone. And I think it's part of reflective of this time, you know, when we were all locked down.
So there we get a sense of the poetic nature of the Shul Isuan when you talk about thinking of others maybe who've gone or Shlina, who are walking in a different realm. Let's have a listen to a little excerpt from it. There you go, Kachiga Jose and Aisling Gyal. It gives us a sense that definitely your brother Gearóid, Mairéadh Ní Mhaoiní, by the way, is speaking with me this evening from Donegal about the upcoming Mooney performance at the Airigal Arts Family, and that her brother Gearóid's song, beautiful quality in that. What about the recording of that? How did you go about that, Mairéadh? Because it all sounds like perfectly harmonised, as if you're all standing around one microphone, but obviously that didn't happen.
No, that didn't happen. We all went in at Manus Lunny's studio, which is next door to me. Very, 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 very handy. But we were all being very careful because we didn't want to impose on his family either. So we took it in turns to go in. And I went in with my daughter, Nia. But my sister went in solo and so did my brother. And so households went in.
Yeah.
You know, that's the way we did it. And we just took our time and made sure everybody was safe and didn't spend too much time there either.
And I guess in that case, Maria, you know, and I know in the normal situation you'd do the recording, but you'd all be there together and you'd have a sense of what the final product was going to sound like. It must have been very exciting then because you all went in and did your own bits separately. And then you get the MP3 or the MP4 or whatever way you got the files, hearing the final song. That must have been a very exciting moment to hear the final product.
It was because, Manus knows our music so well and he's such a fantastic engineer and producer. And we had our own ideas and he knows exactly the way we wanted to sound. So we had full trust. You have to trust the person that's going to do this because especially in these strange times, you cannot be hanging around studios for too long. And we just had to. It's a new way of working, to be honest.
And I guess it. Yes, of course, there are disadvantages to it, but it must bring out some positive sides to things as well. To things as well. Was there a positive aspect to it for you?
Oh, definitely. Creating music is a fantastic thing. It's another step. You know, you play music, especially traditional musicians. You play a lot of older tunes, which is really very inspirational. But to actually add to that collection is fantastic as well. And especially the song, songs in Gaelic are rare. And the store of songs around here is amazing. But it's lovely to put a new one into the pot, you know.
Well, now, Focal Nua Agum Anish Freshen or Arish, Scrad na Bialtana. I know what May is. I had to go looking up Scrad. The Scrad is a kind of a bad-tempered bit of weather in the middle of May. Did you have one of those up in Donegal?
Yes, it always happens. You know, it's that first wee storm, if you get it in May. It's called Scrad na Bialtana. It's the old people used to call it that. And myself and my daughter composed that reel. And I thought it was a great name to kind of keep going. And a lot of people have forgotten that actual phrase, Shgrab na Beltane, you know, the screech of May.
The screech, is that the actual, that's the word, the meaning of the word screech. My mother, I think, used to talk about the borrowed days. And I think the borrowed days were days in May that came from somewhere in the winter. That you got you got a lump of winter in the middle of May. And then somewhere in the middle of October, November, you'd get the borrowed days would be paid back and you'd have a couple of nice days. I think it might be the same type of thing that she was talking about there. Well, listen, so how will things work? Before I let you go, let's have a little bit of a listen to Shgrad na Bealtaine. And if bad weather sounds like this, I want to be in the middle of bad weather. So a little section there from Shgrad na Bealtaine from na Moonies and Mairead na Uaoine speaking to me from Donegal this evening. You know, it's lovely to hear the music and you can still hear the joy of performance within all of that. Have you anxieties around live performance and the effect that this period of time will have on it, Mairead?
Oh, well, my God, I don't know when we're going to be playing again live. Like, we are booked to play the Temple Bar Trad Fest on January 28th. But 2021, but that's just, it all depends. So it's a very, very, very unsure time for performers, for traditional musicians, for every type of musician and every type of people working in the industry. It's just, we don't know our future. It's a very strange time.
I guess more so than at any other point. I mean, traditional music has always been kept alive by families, if you like, and in family situations and in small local groups. More than ever, that's important now.
Oh, yes. Well, it's kind of keeping you going, keeping myself going. My daughter plays music in the house here and I play away. But it kind of lifts you, you know. If it wasn't for the music, I'd find it very, very difficult to deal with all of this unsure future. It's just precarious. It was always precarious. Being a professional musician has always been a strange thing to have. But now we're supposed to be going to the States in early spring, but that's another story. And I find it very, you know, unsure, but maybe it's time to just relax and enjoy the Donegal air.
You mentioned the States in the midst of all of that, and it's nice for you to be enjoying the good Donegal air. And I suppose we're all in the situation now that we can travel, and we can travel to places like Donegal and enjoy it, and enjoy our own country as much as we can enjoy other countries. Enjoy our own country now for this holiday period. But you were in North America in the spring when COVID broke. That must have been a very difficult time. Was it easy to make the decision to come home? Was it immediate?
It was very immediate. I'll tell you, we were keeping an eye on the stories from home, the Irish Times and the Independent, and watching the news and listening to Radio na Gaeltachta. And we knew it was more serious than what was portrayed in the States. So I actually contacted our local TD here, Pierce Doherty, and he said, Tasha Gair Husha, come home straight away. So I rang up all the other bands that I knew. Lunasa were out at the time, and Dervish and Cherish the Ladies. And we rang up, like, we were texting each other and saying, time to go home, people, you know.
Yeah.
So,
Jim, yeah, and then you made, I think people in hindsight will know you made the right decision. Just give me that phrase again of your mother's, Níl Pian na
Polaj Arim.
Níl Pian na Polaj Arim. Well, Nach me Pian na Polaj Arhi. Rave. Well, listen, and kind regards to you and Gormila Mahagot Asve Ling Anok. That's Sinead na Uaoine there. And na Moonies will be on this Sunday at the Airgill Arts Festival on their YouTube channel, 8 p.m. And you can hear the songs that we played the episodes of. You'll hear those and others in full. EAF, Airgill Arts Festival, EAF.ie. Did I call Maria ni Wayne, Sinead ni Wayne somewhere along the way there? I think I might have done. Maria de Sanam de Kincha. Maria is her name. And how beautiful it was to speak to her and with her from Donegal this evening. A dark family drama plays out on a struggling Roscommon farm in The Wild Laughter. This is Keelan Hughes' latest novel, A Dying Father, A Careworn Mother and Two Brothers at Loggerheads and Insurmountable Debt. In the background, or possibly in the foreground, is what propels this story along the way, as well as a love interest, which we'll get to, I'm sure. Nadel Coffey has been reading it for us, and she joins me now from Galway. Tell us a little bit about the family at the heart of this story, if you would, Nadel.
Yeah, so you've got the two brothers. The youngest one is called Hart. He's the good-looking one, but he's also the one who has been sort of forced to stay at home and work on the farm, while the elder one is the clever one. That's Cormac, and he has gone to college, so he's considered very clever, and he's a bit of an entrepreneur. And he's also the apple of his mother's eye. That's Nora. Now, Nora's kind of a quiet figure, but she's also a very powerful figure in the way that a lot of Irish mammies are. And she is an ex-nun as well. And she is married to Manus, who is the dad and the farmer. And he's found himself in a bit of trouble. It's set in 2008, and we'll all remember that time not so fondly. And he made a bad investment, like a lot of people in this country. He invested in a foreign apartment, and he did so because he trusted the man who sort of encouraged him to do so, and he was doing it as well, and he's kind of lost the farm on the back of it. The bank has, he remortgaged the farm and the bank now owns it. So that's where we start, and we also have a little, he discovers he's dying of cancer essentially, and he doesn't want to get treatment, and so that's where the story begins, and that's kind of the dynamic of the family and the relationship between the mother and father as well. It seems like it used to be a very good, very sensual relationship, and that seems to have fallen by the wayside as well.
Keelan Hughes, her debut novel, Orchid and the Wasp, made quite a splash. There was a lot of talk about it and a lot of praise for it. She was dealing with the crash in that book as well, wasn't she?
Yes, and that was in 2018. That was her debut novel, but she had published
a book
of poetry, and she had won a prize for that, and also she was well known as a short story writer as well. So she's quite multi-talented, and she is prize winning. And that book, yeah, it was about a young girl coming of age, and it was set against the backdrop of that as well, and how the crash impacted on that family. So we're in a familiar setting, but it's entirely different because this is a rural setting this time, and we've got two men, and the main narrator is a young man. He's 25, I think he is in this.
Is it Hart? So, is it the good looking fellow who's doing the narrating?
Yes,
here?
Yeah, he's our narrator, and you do have a lot of sympathy for him. And it's funny because Cormac's presented as the really intelligent one, but Hart obviously is equally intelligent, if not more so. He certainly has a lot of emotional intelligence.
But can we believe Hart when he tells us that Hart is good looking? Do we have to kind of, if he's a little bit jealous, because there's quite a sibling rivalry between the two, isn't there?
Oh, huge, huge. And, you know, if we're to believe Hart, Cormac looks like a pelican, and he's got a quite a large lower jaw, and Hart is irresistible. So, but you know, it's borne out that they both clearly have attraction, because they both what's the term, get some in this book.
So I know what you mean. Neither
has any trouble, it seems, with women.
Right, so they've both been successful in the relationship stakes. Perhaps we could say it that way. I mean, a story set on a farm, who's going to get the farm, who's going to inherit the farm, the financial implications of all of that. This isn't new territory. Is Keelan Hughes, does she treat it in some new way?
Oh, but this, for me, this is the major problem about the book. Okay, she is clearly an excellent writer, and technically she is quite brilliant. And I think in that sense, you can see that she's going to play quite an important role in Irish literature. Like, you can see that she's got a big future ahead of her. But for me, this story, as you say, you know, you've got, there's a priest, there's the brothers, there's the farm, there's the sort of embittered mammy, there's the rivalry, and it's an old story, and for me, she hasn't found a new enough way to tell it. She's very deferential, I think, to that story that we know so well, particularly on the Irish stage, and she even name checks a lot of playwrights throughout this book, and I think that deference in a way has hamstrung her a bit, because I feel like she's so respectful of the story of this classic Irish story, which we all know so well, that she almost has sort of constrained herself. And I felt when I was reading this, I felt a little bit like, okay, I know the story so well, and we all know it so well, and I feel like I didn't really have a vested interest in how it was going to turn out, because I felt like I knew how it was going to turn out. And the characters felt almost, because those characters, they're not tropes, it would be unfair to call them tropes, but they're so familiar that it felt like they were almost a little bit surreal. Do you know, you couldn't see them as human beings, because there's a woman in it called Dolly.
This is the love interest is probably a very kind way of putting it, isn't it?
She is the love interest. And yet it's problematic, actually, how Dolly is presented, because for me, she felt like a vehicle at the end of it. She felt like she was there to sort of represent how Irish society has treated women badly over the past. And also I felt she was treated quite badly. I mean, this is probably a personal take, but I felt she was treated badly by the author. I felt she was treated unkindly, you know, it was almost cruel. There was nothing redeeming about her, I felt, and she just felt like she was there to represent that part of Irish society where we had treated women badly in the past, the shame of children out of wedlock, the shame of growing older as women, and you know, we even get a bit about repeal and a bit about choice, and it felt like these characters were, you know, they were there to represent stories as opposed to be real characters.
But you did say, I think, at one point in your notes, you talked about it being in one hand overblown in places, and in other places really well pared back and really light. So heavy handed in some places, really light touch in other places.
Yeah, and again, this comes back to her. She's clearly an incredibly talented writer. Her mastery of language is great. She's beautiful turns of phrases, and you can see the poet in her a lot there as well. But there's a lot there that it felt like there was some heavy-handed kind of imagery that felt it felt unnecessary, because then she'll turn around the next page and you have this beautiful subtle description of the father-son relationship, and she really knew how to sort of control that and play it perfectly. And at other times I just felt like there was no need for that. It was almost like it just felt like everything was being thrown in there at some points, and it just felt like if you pulled that back a tiny bit, it would have really benefited.
One other thing is, given my just interview with Mairead Ní Uaimhne there 5 minutes ago, there's a couple of Focal, quite a lot of couple of Focals throughout,
Irish.
Loads of Irish throughout the book. And how does that work?
It's good, and like it's clearly aimed at, I suppose, an international audience, and that's good. So we get a lot of the Irish. The father, his parents were Gaelgors, and he's kind of trying to keep it going as well. And so we get a lot of Irish, and we get the translation of it as well, which might be irritating for some Irish readers. It wasn't for me, because my Irish isn't great, so I was delighted to have that. But she's clearly very proud of her Irish language, and you get that in her debut novel as well. There's a couple of Focal as well. So it's nice to see it, you know, in a modern Irish novel. It's nice to see it there. So it's clearly just something that she... I'd say it's almost a political choice on her behalf to put it in.
Good for her for putting it out there in the international audience, you know, and just there will be lots of international readers may not be aware of the existence of such a language. So there, of our language. Yeah. Are you recommending this book, yay or nay?
Yeah, I mean, I have to recommend her as a writer, and I think she, as I said, I think she has a big future. My problem with this was, you know, I think her message was a little bit hidden by the sort of overblown plot. You know, she's making really interesting points about how capitalism sort of impacts the family, and how are we supposed to live lives as humans, as individuals, when this sort of huge yoke is bearing down upon us. And I think she wrote a piece herself where she was saying that, you know, that's replaced the Catholic Church as the sort of punitive authority in her lives now. So, yeah, I think if you like Kevin Barry, if you like Patrick McCabe, if you liked Donal Ryan's debut and Mike McCormick's Solar Bones, I think you will really, really enjoy this book. So it's kind of, I would put it in that category. So,
that's not a bad category to
be in. No, it's a great category, absolutely. And I love all those books myself and those authors. But for me, there was something like just that old Irish story. I felt it just needed something slightly newer there and to be told in a newer way.
That's Adele Coffey there speaking to us about Keelan Hughes' new book, which is called The Wild Laughter. And Keelan Hughes will be interviewed by Kevin Barry, who we've just been speaking about, who gives a great blurb actually on the book cover as well. She will be interviewed, Keelan, by Kevin Barry as part of Kurch. They're launching this book as online. They're launching this book next Wednesday, the 22nd of July at 7 p.m. So you can find out full details about that on kurch.ie. And The Wild Laughter by Keelan Hughes is published by One World. And so, final half hour of Friday evening, and time for our album reviews. Up for looking at this evening are Beyond the Pale. This is the debut solo album from former Pulp frontman Jarvis Cocker, or Jarviz as his band is now known. Brightest Blue from Ellie Goulding, her first album in 5 years after struggling with life in the limelight. And Hate for Sale comes from The Pretenders, their 11th album and 40 years on from their number one single, Brass in Pockets. Zara Hedden, Eamon Sweeney have been listening for us. They're with me in studio this evening. Well, Zara is, Eamon's on the line. And let us listen to the title track from The Pretenders. There we go. Hate for Sale, opening track and title track of the new album from The Pretenders. And as we were listening to that, Chrissie Hynde, you know, I want some of that. Thanks very much. 40 years later, it seems business as usual, but business as usual in a good way, I think, Sarah Hederman.
Yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't have been the biggest Pretenders fan outside of their singles. So I didn't really know what to expect with this album. And from the moment I pressed play, I was completely taken by just how vibrant they sound, and how Chrissie Hynde's vocals, she sounds the exact same as she did 42 years ago. It's a pretty big feat, especially for how much she exerts herself.
Yeah, except for one thing. Now, just listen to the first 10 seconds of this again.
That's punk, Sean. That's just punk.
Yeah, there's a thing called cut. Edit. Ah. You mean it's a good job that she sang so well immediately after, because that 10 seconds annoyed me so much. I thought, why are you putting that there? Anyway, maybe you can enlighten me as to why you think that's there. I'm being told now that it's punk, Eamon. I thought I had enough punk sensibility for that not to annoy me, but clearly I don't. How did it work for you, the album? Never mind the first 10 seconds.
I love that bit, but the album as a whole, yes, I would kind of certainly agree what Sarah's saying there. Like, it is an unexpected surprise. Now, they did do a studio record about 4 or 5 years ago. That have been an ongoing thing, but it's the first Pretenders album to feature Chrissie Hynde reuniting with Martin Chambers, who's been one of the original members, who's been part of
the
live group in the last couple of years. And also reunite with Stephen Streich, who has kind of sprinkled his studio fairy dust on records by Blur, The Smiths, The Cranberries, numerous others. And I think he does a sterling job. And it's a very, strong album. It's a far from perfect album. It's got one turkey called Junkie Walk, which is, you know, pretty dubious. But the rest of it is very, very solid.
Yeah,
maybe nothing, you know, to rival. I don't hear a Brass in Pocket on it, but it's still a really strong record.
And funny that you should pick a Junkie Walk there as a problematic track for you. I think it was the same for you, Sarah. And even it annoyed you even more than the first 10 seconds annoyed me, I think.
It did. I felt that it, I mean, that pejorative is horrible anyway, and it's a very insensitive and dehumanising way to describe someone who, say, has a drug addiction. And I found it quite surprising, actually, for The Pretenders to have a song like this, because they've had so much first-hand experience of former band members struggling with drug addictions, dying from overdoses. That one really kind of jarred and changed my listening to this album.
Okay, now I'm in two minds about the next, which of the two tracks I have in front of me to play. I love You Can't Hurt a Fool because it's kind of so gentle, but I love Didn't Want to Be This Lonely because it's the most upbeat breakup song I've ever heard. Which do you want to hear, since you're in front of me, Zara?
Well, I actually would have loved to have heard The Buzz, but
no, you're not giving me your choice.
I'll go with Didn't Want to Be This Lonely. But I didn't want to be this lonely. No, I didn't want to be this lonely.
There we go. Who didn't want to be this lonely, but she is. But even that's a kind of a breakup song that's quite upbeat. Well, that's what I was saying, is the nature of that song, isn't it? So overall, this album from The Pretenders, you, Eamon Sweeney, first of all, does it work? How many stars?
Yeah, it does work. It's certainly no masterpiece, but I'll give it 3 stars.
Right. And Zara, I think you're somewhere similar with that, are you?
Yeah, I really loved the 60s nods to it, the bit of reggae, the punk. So I'm going to go for a 3 as well.
You're going to go for a 3 as well. Can I play a little bit of that very gentle song? Let's play a little bit, because the other two songs kind of give us that it's just all upbeat. But this is quite sweet. Oh, you can't hurt a fool. I'm glad I played that now. It is gorgeous, and it's the Pretenders Country album that track is from. Okay, you've given your judgment on the album. Let us move on to album number 2, Beyond the Pale, from Jarvis Cocker, or Jarviz is what the band is now called. Former Pulp frontman, obviously, Jarvis Cocker. Who's involved in the band here, Zara?
So we have, this is a 6-piece and all very accomplished musicians within their own right. We have Serafina Steer, who's on harp, Emma Smith, who's a violinist, Andrew McKenney, who's on bass, and Adam Buckle, who is a drummer. And I suppose the quality of their musicianship is no surprise that Jarvis surrounded himself with them, because initially this was to be an outfit that really operated as a live band and not so much as an album release band.
Let us have a listen to a track called House Music All Night Long.
Saturday night, cabin fever in House Nation. This is one nation under a roof. Ain't got the truth. Goddamn this claustrophobia. Cause I should be in a woodland glade.
Oh, I had to leave it to that line came out. Saturday night cabin fever. God damn this claustrophobia, because I should have been disrobing you. I've never heard that rhyme before for claustrophobia, Eamon Sweeney, and that line stood out for you. There's a real lockdown theme, obviously, to that song. Is that there across the album, Eamon?
Yeah, big time. It's as Zara just mentioned there, it's kind of like this group were kind of convened to do live performances, which organically led to an album. And they worked out these songs in front of a live audience. And Jarvis Cocker, you know, going back to Sorted for Ease and Wiz from Different Class, he's always this intuitively really got dance music and rave culture and so on. This was written pre-lockdown about fear of missing out, the party. I'm middle-aged. I'm in this world of interiors and everybody else is off having fun at the rave, and I can't do that anymore. So totally by accident, it's become a bit of a kind of a lockdown anthem and a kind of a... It's wonderful, as you point out there. He hasn't lost it with the lyrics. Like, he really knows, you know, how to do something that's very Jarvis-esque, really, for want of a better phrase. Yeah. You know, it's unmistakable, his voice and his lyrics.
On another track, the track just in front of House Music All Night Long, a track called Am I Missing Something? He says there's a lyric in the midst of that: your children are here to tell you do something new or do something else. Is he doing something new here? Is he doing something else here, Zara?
Yeah, I definitely think, I mean, obviously, as Eamon was saying, there are Jarvis Cocker idiosyncrasies all over this album from the lyrics. But what I think his group of musicians that he's surrounded with, I mean, they're doing something, I feel, different track by track. I mean, you have, as we heard there, really shimmering electronic arrangements. There's some classic rock. There's also, this starts off with a kind of nod to Leonard Cohen's You Want It Darker. So we are getting a lot of tropes that we are familiar with Jarvis, but there's just a bit more of a vibrancy.
Something, there's still something new in them.
Yeah, and I think that that's probably the kind of the nature of this album, where they're indulging themselves in that live setting.
So you mentioned Leonard Cohen in terms of the opening track, Save the Whale.
Exactly,
Let's have a listen.
I was busy getting saturated. I like a dark movie on the yin and yang. You and me, the male and the female. Move. Move beyond the veil.
There you go. Leonard Cohen is alive and well and living in a Jarvis album called Beyond the Pale. And we get the obviously the title of the album is there buried within that song, Save the Whale. It really is an homage to Leonard Cohen. You couldn't call it anything else, Eamon, I think, could you?
Oh, absolutely. He's really, like, if I've ever heard anyone channel Leonard Cohen, it's his vocal on that track. Who he did work with in some capacity for that tribute concert in The Point. That's really going back. Yeah. And there's a bit of a Nick Cave kind of feel on some of the tracks as well, like another person that he's worked with. Scott Walker's an obvious one who he worked with for We Love Life. And it reminds me a little bit actually of that record, I think, which is a very underrated pop record in 2001. And this is hardcore, like the late era, more experimental, looser kind of pop, when they weren't trying to be such a pop band, or as somebody once said, a cross between ABBA and The Fall, which is probably one of the best descriptions I've heard of pop. And it really, I was listening, because I was interviewing him for this record, I kind of did it, listened to a lot of his early solo material and a lot of the pop stuff, and it really stands up with the best of it. And especially the early solo material, it sounds a little bit dated now, but I think on album number 3 he's really beginning to nail it.
Okay, and it has to be said, 7 tracks on this album, which is not the case with the final album that we're going to talk about, but 7 tracks on this album. Now, some of them are long songs, maybe 6, and I think there's a 6-minute song on there, maybe 7 minutes, 5 minutes, 6 minutes are quite common, but it doesn't overstay its welcome. Stars from you, Zara, first of all.
I was incredibly captivated by this from my first listen. I think it's really sophisticated, it's really fun, and it's going to be a 4 out of 5 for me.
4 out of 5 from you. And what are you saying, Eamon?
I'll go a little bit further. I'll go 4.5. I think it's one of the records I've really, really enjoyed a lot this year.
Well, you could give it the extra half for Cocker's own description of the album, and got this courtesy of Zara, for which thank you, Zara. Okay. Not a live album, it's an alive album. There you go.
Good old Jarvis.
Yeah, there he goes. He'll be copywriting for some advertising firm before long. Let us move on to Brightest Blue from Ellie Goulding. I suppose in terms of either the Pretenders or Jarvis Cocker, she's the baby in the room, but what has she achieved in 10? It's a 10-year career, I suppose. And the last 5 pretty much silent.
It is actually quite remarkable, Sean. When I was reading about her again this week, I mean, before she even released her second album, 2 years after her debut, Lights, which came out in 2010, she was invited to perform at the Nobel Peace Prize concert in Norway. She sang at the wedding reception of the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge. She supported U2. She's multi-Grammy nominated, which is quite remarkable when she actually failed her music A-levels, which I found that quite a funny little fact. But what's interesting, I think, about Ellie Goulding and her career is how she is a real example of her record label and management really pivoting towards different tropes to push her music and broaden her audience. We got this in 2010. Her debut, Lights, was redone with remixes to kind of get into the running subculture, to get her into, you know, the fitness fanatics. And I kind of see that again here, where she's gone towards the more streaming culture of putting out an album, and I'm not really too sure it works, but...
Yeah, it's 18 tracks, although some of those are little overtures and interludes and types of things, but there's 18 tracks in total. Let's have a listen to a track which I think both of you liked, called Slow Grenade. Slow Grenade, track from Eddie Goulding's latest album, Brightest Blue. Did you like that track, or did I put words in your mouth, Eamon Sweeney?
I think it's okay.
When I closed the microphone, Zara said, I did not like that track. She was adamant.
There's stronger tracks on there. Mm. Like it's as we just heard there. It's, you know, it's generic pop. It's okay, generic pop. It's not reinventing the wheel. There's an army of producers, an army of collaborators, and Diplo and all these sort of people involved, and the results are pretty mixed. And I think we keep on returning to this point about how long it is. It's essentially a double album, and on the track list she has side one, but then it's not side two, it's EG.0 as an ego, which is she says the team is
a bit like the little 10 kind of seconds at the opening of the Pretenders track. Okay, let's go on. Sorry.
It is really like, I suppose, in the, Zara is saying there, she's so, you know, marketed, and this is kind of for the streaming age. And the problem with the streaming age is when people put out an album, you know, kind of like time constraints are, you know, not a consideration anymore. Yeah. So, you know, you have stuff like, you know, Brian Eno albums, like a recent compilation going on for 5 hours, which it suits very much his audience and his thing. But something like this, which is trying a little bit to be high concept, a bit Janelle Monáe, and but not quite pulling it off.
Are you both being a bit harsh here? I mean, there are times that track doesn't show it. So maybe I should play another track to kind of make my argument work, hopefully. Yes, let's have a listen to Power. Beautiful lies on a Friday night, starting to wonder where we lost the magic. Head in the clouds, talking so loud. All I hear is dead. I'm not a material girl. Everything in your world just feels like plastic. Wearing your crown is putting me down. You just want the power. You're not really down for love. You just want the power. Well, the power. Okay, so that's Power from Eddie Goulding's album Brightest Blue. So my argument was going to be, you know, there is a good voice in there. She can pump out a kind of a power ballad, even though that's not fully in the power ballads thing. And there are good arrangements around her, Zara.
Yeah, absolutely. And as Eamon was saying, you know, she has an army of producers and songwriters working with her, and her vocals, she does have such a distinct style. I mean, early on in her career, she was likened to Dolly Parton. What I wished she had have done here is, one, maybe just done a 13-song album, cut some of the interludes, or else woven them a bit neater into the songs. And I also would have loved if she had have just stuck to that style of soundscape that we just heard there with Power. I thought that was the most contemporary that she gets. This album is quite disparate. There's those kind of really sultry soundscapes. Then there's a lot of really twee ballads, which take up a huge portion of the middle. And then at the end, there's just loads of kind of hip hop, a lot of guests on there. So I think she has really... I think the greatest problem with this is that she is trying to fit into a mold that I'm not too sure if she's fitting into so well.
And Zara Manson's guests there, how impressive are the guests, and do they add to the record for you, Eamon?
Yeah, they do, but again, it's
who are they?
The
who, have we got,
thing.
Who have we got? We've got Serpent with Feet, and who else? Who's the other? There's another
major
guest.
Oh, yes, he does the
World
first track.
And Sway Lee.
Sorry, go ahead there. Let Eamon tell me. Go ahead, Eamon.
Serpent with Feet, Diplo, tons of others.
Yeah.
Like there is a bit of a who's who of contemporary pop producers there. It's just as Zara says, it kind of, the track like there, The Power, that I think has a sense of identity. But I would have to disagree with you, Sean, about her voice. Like, it's okay. It's a passable I think, pop voice. But, you know, we spoke about Jessie Ware's record there a couple of weeks ago. Much more personality. Yeah, much
I wouldn't say singular. it's not a voice of that standard, that's for sure.
No, far near it. I think there's much better, you know, contemporary pop singers in the world today than Ellie Goulding.
All right, so you weren't that impressed, either of you, by Brightest Blue, I'm picking up. What did you say, stars-wise, Eamon Sweeney?
I would go, as Zara was saying there, you know, if it whittled down to maybe 12 or 13 tracks, if you took maybe half the stuff of, you know, side A and half of side B. So, because it's so 50-50, and I'm not really into the 50 that's decent, I'll go 2.5.
2.5 for the 50 bits, for the 50-50 that you liked. And what are you saying, Zara?
Yeah, I just think there's too many cooks here, and it had potential, but for me, I'm going to have to agree with Eamon, and it's 2.5.
2.5. Well, you're fairly consistent, has to be said. Both of you on that, Brightest Blue from Ellie Goulding and Beyond the Pale from Jarvis, or Jarvis Cocker, as opposed to the rest of us, and Hit for Sale from The Pretenders, the three albums, Zara Hederman and Eamon Sweeney speaking with me on this Friday evening. That brings us to the end of this week here in Arena. Leah Murphy and Paula Shields researched. Janice Furphy was the broadcast coordinator. Patrick Carney was on sound this evening, and tonight's programme was produced by Olin McGann. Have a great weekend. Talk to you on Monday at 7.